The addictive roguelike game Balatro has become one of the biggest hits of the year, mixing elements of poker and solitaire into a fiendish experience. And now my life is ruined because it's coming to mobile thanks to Apple Arcade. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade. And you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
sifter.com.au.
If you think about those classic samurai films, the classic Ronin stories, they're wanderers, which touches a lot of subtle things that you may not expect. Like, let's do an inn. Well, an inn means that other people can gather around here. And when you have this wanderer, coming back to an inn means this is almost your temporary relief from this lethal world, so we can lean into it a lot through the course of the game. Atsu starts the game as the Onryo, so it's not a tale about becoming the ghost, it's a tale about what it means to be a ghost and live with that in many ways. Jin was more of a community leader where the entire island was extremely familiar to him. So there's some differences in the concept of how Jin would interact with the world and how he would be honor-bound, and how Atsu is kind of always moving and always on the fly, and what it means for her to come back to spaces over and over again.
Hi, I'm Chris Button, and I've just recorded the latest episode of Light Map, Sifter's interview podcast, with Rob Davis, the campaign director on the recently released Ghost of Yotei by Sucker Punch Productions. And before we get into that, which was a really good chat about his Australian games development history and what went into making all of the quests and campaigns of Ghost of Yotei, let's find out what happened on Walkthrough, Sifter's news podcast.
Hi, I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And I'm Naomi Jackson.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 26th of October.
Bluey is finally coming home with Queensland-based Fruit Ninja developer Halfbreak making the next game.
Halo Campaign Evolved is the Unreal Engine remake of the first Xbox title out next year.
Neopets classic games are getting a re-release game, so get ready to brush up your skills in Mirka Chase.
And it's a massive week of releases, including some local titles, so keep listening for Release Radar.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
First off, Rob, thank you so much for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us today. To start with, campaign director on Ghost of Yotei. That sounds like a very broad and very involved sort of role. Could you explain what that actually entails?
Oh, sure. I direct all the missions of the game. We do a lot of the open world gameplay and a lot of the fight spaces and encounters as well in the game. But as I tell everyone, it's mostly a fancy way of saying I play the game a lot and work with the designers a lot in the game.
I did see during the panel last night that playing the game a lot during that testing involved many cans of LaCroix as well.
That's right.
When you're actually playing through a game many times to try and see how it all pieces together, what sort of things are you actually looking for?
So early when I rolled onto the project, our studio head, Brian Fleming, told me, you're not going to believe this, but we've worked out over the years that we actually have quite a few different types of people who like the Ghost franchise, and we're proud of all of them, and we love to support all of them. So you're going to have to think in all kinds of different vectors and ways compared to God of War, which is also very creative, but in different ways. And he said, we have a concept called GP Rabbits, which means the people who rush through the golden path of the game because they love the story and the characters. And then we have what we call time travelers, or Hokkaido time travelers, who treat it almost like a tour of Tsushima or a tour of Hokkaido. And then we have kind of the most common, the changes on every game we do, which is a mix of both. People who do a bit of story, people do a bit of exploration, people who go deep on combat or go deep on upgrading. They kind of, I call them the kaiseki players or the bento box players. They like to see the whole bento box as they play the game. And so when I played through the game, we would sometimes say, okay, which one are we doing this time? Are we doing Mr. 100%, where we're going to try and 100% everything in each area? Are we doing GP Rabbit this time? Are we doing lethal mode? And so we tried, at least for myself, and actually our vice president, Grady Hunt, plays the game a lot as well. So we would often chat about which type of playthrough we're doing. And we'd try to see it all from the different perspectives of different types of players and try to understand interesting little patterns that you couldn't necessarily see in isolation.
Yeah, and that must present so many challenges, especially when making such a large-scale open-world game, trying to cater to these different types of players. How do you actually conceptually and design a game that can appeal to this broad spectrum of different types of players?
We definitely start with the hero fantasy and the world fantasy. In this case, R2 being a wandering mercenary. So you can quite easily, I hope, look at a film like Yojimbo or the Lone Wolf and Cub series and say, wouldn't it be cool if? Imagine if I could play as that character. Imagine if I could do that. And that's a very strong North Star that carries you through. And then from the world perspective, you can think about it a lot. What is this space? Where am I going? Why am I excited to be here? What are the mysteries, the curiosities, the lore behind it? When you put those two things together, you have a very strong start point. And then there's what I would consider to be maybe a more modern take on this as well, which is, what are the emotions? What are we trying to evoke from a tonal perspective, from a character perspective, from a rhythm perspective as well? And for this game, samurai cinema is obviously very tonally present in the game. Hopefully, players really find that unique and something special that our game does really well. But we also started to think a lot in terms of rhythm. What is, when I go to these different areas, the tale of the oni, the tale of the kitsune, how can we pace it out in terms of highs and lows? What are the emotions Atsu and her wolf pack going through in these moments? And how can the missions, the open world, the pacing and the narrative all come together to make a cadence through the sequences, so that it doesn't feel like one mission here, one mission there, but instead it should feel like one whole season of a television show or a really great film or a page-turning book where it has a full arc through the course of its adventure.
Yeah. And what are the practicalities of actually enacting that and constructing, you know, that story, that mission, that rhythm, and hitting those emotions? What does the practical day-to-day look like from your perspective and your team's perspective to see that through?
Well, we iterate a lot. We play through the game every 6 weeks as a team. We try to keep ourselves honest, and Sucker Punch is a fairly critical crew of ourselves, but hopefully in a way where it's about having each other's backs and supporting each other. So, like most creative things, something is created on the page, something is created in production, and something is created in the edit. And we try to be successful at all three phases. So early on, if we're looking at the tale of the Oni, we're thinking about, okay, what is the most important role of this mission early on? Is there a single sentence we can summarize that brings this, that would be successful if we could deliver that? And then as you play through the game, no spoilers, you might notice that the first mission in each area is almost a tour of the space. We try to make you intuitively see things as you're being led through the open world. So we try to create an adventure that's a bit of a tour of the space. And then, you know, I won't get it too much into spoiler territory, but the second mission usually focuses heavily on the villain. The third is, we try to do a pulse-raising moment in there somewhere to get your pulse up a bit. And then the fourth is usually very character-driven. And then the final one is usually all out. So you kind of get this up and down and up. And then another part of this is we start to think about, what are the features might go in there as well, how they could promote those emotions or promote those themes, promote those character moments along the way. Because it's nothing more drab than getting a pretty rote tutorial in the game. So if we can build it into the adventure or into the character moments, clearly it's going to make you interested in experimenting with the new feature. And it's also going to contribute to the feeling of R2 being a scrappy, improvisational, wandering mercenary who kind of gets the job done. And so those are some considerations in there.
Well, specifically thinking of Atsu and, say, the difference between Atsu and Jin from Ghost of Tsushima, how does that factor into how you're structuring the campaign as well when you're thinking about the difference between the characters, perhaps someone who's perhaps a more refined swordsman versus the scrappy mercenary nature of Atsu?
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic question, thanks, because we love both characters, and Atsu is an origin story, and so you get to go on the adventure with Atsu as Atsu in this game. Atsu starts the game as the Onryo, so it's not a tale about becoming the ghost, it's a tale about what it means to be a ghost and live with that in many ways. So there's quite a few opportunities that offered to us, but the biggest one is, if you think about those classic samurai films, and the classic Ronin stories, they're wanderers. And so we tried to think backwards from the promise of that experience overall, which touches a lot of subtle things that you may not expect. Like, let's do an inn. Well, an inn means that other people can gather around here. And now that it's somewhat isolated by itself, an inn is not a particularly dense space in this game. Well, now that offers the opportunity for players to come back here a lot more. Okay, well, now that offers the opportunity for us to make more characters out of the vendors or more of a moment out of the bounty board in the game. And when you have this wanderer, coming back to an inn means this is almost your temporary relief from this lethal world, so we can lean into it a lot through the course of the game. Jin was more of a community leader where the entire island was extremely familiar to him. An inn is somewhere where Atsu is taking relief from the harsh outside world. So there's some differences in the concept of how Jin would interact with the world and how he would be honor-bound, and how Atsu is kind of always moving and always on the fly, and what it means for her to come back to spaces over and over again.
You've mentioned a few times that the use of space and the different spaces in Ghost of Yotei, and I recall during your panel last evening, there was a lot of mention about the challenges of converting or using the space of Hokkaido and Northern Japan with its vast open expanses in terms of trying to make that a compelling open world game and open compelling space to be in. Because I think as a lot of people have noted over the years, with open world, bigger doesn't necessarily mean better.
Right.
So what techniques did you implement or try to put through Ghost of Yotei to make that space a compelling open world that's engaging for players?
Yeah, I was mentioning last night in the panel, we're extremely proud of our partnerships with Japan and trying to replicate the emotions that we felt in Hokkaido. Those giant fields are not necessarily the most intuitive start points. They're very open, and in some cases they're basins. Other ones have visual occluders like mountains or cliff sides or a blizzard is naturally makes it hard to plan your route through the world. But we're just very committed to the concept of rewarding exploration, empowering freedom, and getting a little scrappy and intuitive with how we solve problems as well. So what might work in Teshia Ridge in terms of hanging lanterns that you can see through the fog that drive curiosity is very different from how it works in Teshia Ridge, where you might see a crack in a cliff that inspires lighting and encourages you in, or a character who's throwing bombs at a distance. So we're always trying to find creative ways to inspire the player to investigate in the world. And instead of saying, oh wow, that's going to be a challenging space to work with, I think we look at it more like, Well, that is what it feels like. How can we bring it to life? What ideas do we have and what inspiration do we have? And in many cases, the team is incredibly fast in this engine. Everyone's been working, a lot of people have been working since Infamous Second Son in the Ghost Engine. So there's tons of little tricks people can try out very quickly to drive curiosity, mystery, challenge, inspiration in the open world. And on some games, that looks like a very clear visual language across the board. On Ghost, it's more of an organic visual language based on the organic nature of Hokkaido.
What are some of those specific tricks that the team can use to try and inspire that curiosity?
A lot of the times it can be something we call weed whacking, where we'll actually like strip parts of a forest away. The white flowers ended up being such a simple prototype, and they're almost a little bit like Burnout Paradise or F-Zero. Do you know the game F-Zero? Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure 100% why. There's probably some kind of game design psychology we could work out, but you do angle towards them intuitively because you get a tiny speed boost. Maybe that's why it's satisfying to do. And 99 others. There's definitely some color palette and some lighting best practices we do to try and make things pop more than others, some weather patterns, but silhouettes are huge in this game as well, whether it's a tree, a curious rock, a single inn standing on a horizon, and also how we create those shapes so that certain things are promoted in natural shots in the world versus lost in the shuffle. And in general, our art team is quite quick to make an edit, make a change, to tune something, and phenomenally talented at this, by the way. So each space has slightly different tricks, but there's certainly some standards that we use across all spaces, like a giant red tree, a curious shape, language for a sumi-e, a strong profile off in the distance.
That comes to mind for me a lot of the visual language that's used in other open world games like Breath of the Wild. A lot of the Zelda games do that quite effectively, and it's very apt you mentioned some of the other inspirations as well. So I'd love to know, in terms of open world games, open world design, are there other studios or other games that you see to as some form of inspiration, or you think do open world really, really well?
Well, for me at least, I try to think about Japanese films, and I try to think about what if I could bring that to life. So one example is I watched a lot of Japanese movies at the start of this project because I hadn't worked on Ghost, so I needed to play catch up with everyone and have interesting conversations with people. And in the movie Ran, there's this really curious flute player, which is almost out of Silent Hill. Something like that. It's almost out of a horror movie. And we ended up making a mission called Soma the Condemned, which has been quite popular, I think, with people. But that audio of hearing the flute off in the distance is inspired by the film Ran. And it's what Walt Disney would have called a weenie. You know, it draws you over from a distance. And there's so many moments like that that when you're trying to bring the world of samurai cinema to life and the world of Hokkaido to life, you can, in many cases, look at the natural world and see how we're inspired as humans or how we're inspired emotionally and creatively in films and in manga. So I tend to look a lot at the films. You know, I play a lot of games, like Spider-Man, obviously a fantastic open world game, probably my personal favorite recent open world game. But I try to keep myself as honest as possible by looking at the films, the books. And one podcast I loved, an audiobook, was called Travis Herman's Heart of the Ronin. And even the clanging of someone repairing armor can be a draw of it in the open world. He had all these fabulous ideas in that book as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear more about sort of your career as well, given you're an Australian who's now, you know, working on some of the biggest games in the world, in the industry at the moment. And we know you've worked on some of the Tiger, the Tasmanian Tiger.
That's right.
Just Royal Humans, the franchise, early days in Australia. How did you get your start in the Australian scene before you then move to the US?
I was an artist and animator. I trained at SAE Sydney. It was a really cool time because it was right around that era where the Star Wars films were being made in Sydney. And everybody knew just enough to get themselves in trouble, you know, in 3D packages and 3D tools, and not enough to know how hard it would be to take something to market. So you had this enthusiasm to get going no matter what. And people I worked with, most of them wanted to work on the films, I wanted to work on the games, but there were so few people at the time who knew how to use 3D Studio Max on the design side, or Maya at the time, that I was mostly offered a job at Chrome Studios by John Passfield, actually, who was a fabulous mentor of mine, because I could build things in 3D. I think when I turned up to Chrome, they didn't expect me to be 21 years old and looking like 15, basically. And so when I turned up, like, oh my God, we thought you might be a little more experienced than this. But you get going, you get busy, you learn more every day. And actually, I will say, you know, it was a time before streaming media. So people were not as present online. And I always remember I would reach out to all the famous game designers. And Dave Perry, who ran Shiny at the time, he created all those Disney games like Aladdin and The Lion King. He would always get back to me. And he said, when you get your first job, just treat yourself like an RPG character and try to learn as much as you can, level up every skill every day. And I always took that to heart. And it was fabulous advice, truly, because the games are incredibly technical. And some of our most fastidious designers at Sucker Punch are doing things you would never expect in these missions, from hacking animations to futzing with lighting to tuning audio. I mean, there's whole departments that are just incredible at doing this as well. But the designers at Sucker Punch are actually very T-shaped and very technical and in some ways almost like modders every day. So all those little touches and details that I'm so proud of in this game from our design team is from this philosophy which we call curious tinkerers. And I'd like to think that's what Dave Perry was actually suggesting, be a curious tinkerer.
Continuing that that career path as well, you made the move to the US around quite a volatile time in the games industry, around the time of the global financial crisis. How did you then progress to working on some of these major PlayStation franchises, including God of War for so many years, and now with Yotei?
I worked up in Seattle for a couple of years doing the kids and family games, which I had a blast doing. You have to make the games in 1 year, so no time, Dr. Jones, let's go. And also there's something wonderful about kids and family games because you don't have to worry about where enemies or elements come from. Pixie dust, solved, moving on. And it's a very fun and fast type of creativity. When the God of War team was interested in me coming over to work on the levels for the game, I sat next to a designer named Jonathan Hawkins for 2 years who had worked on God of War 1, God of War 2, God of War 3, and he's truly one of the most brilliant level designers and creators a person could imagine. And I realized, oh, my craft skills are fine, but the God of War team's craft skills are like something else entirely. And same with Sucker Punch. So for 2 years, it was almost like being in a Michelin kitchen. I learned all the tricks. And he was so generous with his time to teach me so many of them. It wasn't about typing, it was about writing. You know, a lot of us could type, but he taught me kind of how to write. And so he's a particularly fabulous mentor of mine and friend.
So from a craft perspective, what is the difference between typing and writing in the context of your work?
Creating something with a soul, with purpose, with an intent is a big one. Having the practice, 10,000 hour skills under your belt to execute what's in your head physically. Building relationships so that people give you honest feedback on your work. Lowering your ego so that you're not afraid to change something if it doesn't go well. And a little bit of elbow grease.
Absolutely. And with, you know, with the God of War work and with Yote under your belt working on these really large scale open world games and your level design experience over years, broadly speaking, what would you say actually makes for good level design? What are the crucial parts of good level design?
Someone said this to me a while ago and I thought it was the best way I've ever had to describe it, which is good levels create a theme and an adventure. A lot of games have terrific action. I'd like to think that a lot of the games in the Sony catalog, whether it's God of War, Spider-Man, not that I've worked on Spider-Man, I would love to, and Tsushima, it's not just the action component, it's the adventure component as well. Can we send you on a journey filled with characters and wonderful spaces and mysteries, relatable characters, imaginative worlds, little stories that are more than meets the eye? The adventure component in these games is, I think, what actually touches people's hearts in many cases. And it's something I'm super proud of all of our games. Yeah.
Absolutely. And speaking specifically to Yote, when looking at such a large-scale project that is the sequel to such a beloved game in Sony's and Sucker Punch's historic history, what were some of the foundational core pillars that you approached the game with as the campaign director? What were the core design principles that you wanted to imbue?
I think one of the big ones for this game, obviously honoring the samurai tone is huge. Creating a vengeful story about a wandering mercenary is an incredibly strong pitch, which is easy for us to drive forward with. And then one that was a little unique to our squad was really wanted everything in the open world to feel handcrafted, hand-touched, and to tell its own story and to have its own little adventure. So I mentioned yesterday, but I'll shout it out again, we were so blessed to be able to work with a writer named Ariadna, who took this incredible, really wonderful partnership with the designers to say, okay, I see what you're going for. That's a cool idea for a bounty. How can we tie it into the overall picture of the world? How can we give some insight into Atsu? How can we even have some heartwarming moments along the way? And that partnership between the design team and the writing team really lifted the tide on this game, in my humble opinion. Couldn't be more proud of the team for the response we're seeing on the open world this time. But that partnership really does show you how much player expectations have lifted as well. People want a fully realized world. They want characters that are human and relatable. And they want to feel like every part of the world contributes to the adventure and to the tone of the game. That is also in huge part to our narrative team on this game, who always ask the interesting question of how does it contribute to the tale of the Oni? How does it contribute to Atsu? How does it contribute to the world conflict? How can we tune it just a bit to elevate it a little bit more? And I think we got modern on taking that with both hands. And it's really wonderful to see players appreciating that. And I hope people give our narrative team a nod and our design team a nod on that one.
And on a similar note, one of the really interesting things I've heard you say before and I've been thinking about ever since was one of the approaches to Ghost of Yote, its open world design, its level design, mission, the overall structure of the game, was trying to differentiate between making content and making missions and quests that furthered the narrative and furthered how lived in the game felt versus content that was perhaps considered empty calories. How do you make that differentiation between what is meaningful content versus said empty calories?
What is an empty calorie to some people and a heartwarming snack to others, right? Don't take my Doritos. Those aren't empty calories by my metric. Those are my favorite calories, not my empty calories, right? No, you're totally right. You know, the functional answer is we try to come up with a strong theme for each valley. What is the Oni doing in this land and how does it contribute to Atsu's personal growth and to the challenges that she's facing and still the feeling of a wandering mercenary? Those things are really great and they're strong North Stars. The other part of it is intuition, gut, and taste. We play things a lot. We look at the game. If it's crappy, we're fixing it or we're getting rid of it. And our design team is pretty dang critical of their own work and of their own successes and failures. And sometimes that's hard for us because it's a little bit exhausting to always be looking at your work through a pretty critical lens. So we try to be kind to one another every day. But there's an enormous amount of pride in the team from Tsushima. And there was this huge goal of, can we lift the variety and the handcraftedness of the open world in this game? So you have, you know, let's call them strong director goals. And then you have fastidious taste, gumption, and love for the franchise. And somewhere in the middle there is also what players are telling us every day and every week. So we start with high-level direction, but we're always trying to keep ourselves honest day over day. And I think that culture is just really important to see both sides of it.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you'd like to share about Ghost of Yotei or your career to date?
I said it last night, but I'll say it again. I think one of the messages of this game is that we all need support sometimes, and through the course of this adventure, you'll see how R2 changes as a wandering mercenary and the twists and turns that we as humans go through. Everyone needs support and family and friendships. So thanks to all the partners of everyone who supported us at Sucker Punch, including my own. And thank you for, you know, behind the scenes and helping us to be a strong team.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Rob. Really appreciate it. And congratulations on the launch of Ghost of Yotei.
Thank you so much. Yes, appreciate it.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
That was Lightmap, Sifter's interview podcast. Thank you so much for joining us live on the PAX floor. Stay tuned for more PAX Australia content and be sure to subscribe to Sifter for more content and games coverage in general.